Welcome to the show. Today I'm playing a compilation of speeches and my interviews with Homeland Security Department Chief Information Officers. First, we hear from DHS Headquarters CIO Luke McCormick. He spoke at a recent FCA Homeland Security conference.
Early adoption of a lot of the technologies, including the continuous diagnostic work that's going on, the Einstein work that's going on. We're an early adopter of all those technologies. We try to shake those down and implement that so that when we propagate that across the rest of the interagency, we've sort of shaken out any kind of kinks there, and we can rapidly deploy that. So there's an intense amount of activity going on to harden our environment, make sure we have good, strong hygiene, and really innovate ourselves into some forward-deployed and forward-thinking kind of capabilities. You heard the Deputy Secretary that mentioned work that's going on in that area, including bringing some more expertise in to the agency to help us sort of think through the big problems and look at some of the activity that's going on in that sort of forward-deployed area that I like to describe. But there is a lot of work going across all the components in regards to strengthening our cyber posture. I was with the president and the staff and all the CEOs of Fortune 50 companies out in California, where we were focused an entire day on this. And you had the president up there speaking in detail about the cyber activities and what we're doing today and what we need to do as a community and across the industry. And so this is job number one for all of us in this administration. There's a very small handful of subjects, as you can imagine, that get me in front of the secretary for different reasons. One of them is always unity of effort, and you all have heard all about that, right, and the work that's going on to unify the department and sort of focus on where the gaps are and make sure that we're, using our resources efficiently. Another one's always cyber, right, that we spend activity on. Another big one is our people, right? As a leadership team, as you can imagine, we spend a lot of time focusing on our people and our human capital. And another one is information sharing, right? So that is another activity that, and again, there's of all the things that are on my in my job jar, and there's a lot of them, as you can imagine, there's a very small set that we are talking to the secretary about them, and I just want to make sure everyone understands that's one of them, okay? Information sharing and all the activities going on with information sharing and how we're doing that with Justice and the IC and variety of other things.
McCormick was then asked about his day-to-day challenges that most people don't recognize or understand.
Time to market and sort of mark the market, right? It's a pricing piece of that as well. So this is everything from really re-energizing our all the way in the Petri dish, right? This is the our CTO community. It just happens that both Joe and I are hiring CTOs right about the same time. And I spent some time with Joe out in the Silicon Valley area, and some of Charlie's folks were out there, and Adrian's been out there, really working with the VC community, you know, again, way out into the sort of the Petri dish incubator kind of activity, all the way up to just blocking and tackling, right? You know, our goal is to make sure the barrier of entry and access to the capabilities that these folks need to deliver the goods is low, right? And it's easy to do. And so things like Eagle 2, where we just recently have gotten everything squared away on that and functional core category, I think one it was with, unrestricted and things of that nature. Now we have a budget so we can go there, right? And that's real important. So thank you to our acquisition community on that so that they have those tools and they can get access to them very quickly and they can execute. And then once they execute from an acquisition standpoint, you know, we want to make sure that we're executing. And to be perfectly candid, and for some reason, if we're not, you know, the barrier of exit is fairly low. So we keep the competition where it should be, and we keep everyone on their toes. And I think that's fair to do that, right? That's what made this country great. We're also changing the delivery model, and you see that a lot, right? You're seeing that in CIS, continuous delivery. Charlie's doing that. FEMA and TSA are in the works and planning some of that, and that's an ecosystem thing, right? You have to have the right kind of skills. You have to have the right kind of contract structures to make sure you have easy access to those things and the ability to deliver in these increments as we describe, and that's real important. So we want to make sure that the processes the governance structure that we have is not the governance structure of yesterday or even today. It's the governance structure of tomorrow that's going to allow them to do the things that they need to do. So there's a lot of work going on right now to continue to tune that and adopt that and adapt it to, you know, where we're going as a community and make sure those things are doing the things that they need to do, because it's absolutely very important for us to do that. That's one of our primary responsibilities, but also facilitate that capability so that these components can deliver the goods for those mission operators so that we can keep this country safe, right? That's what we're all about. There's two pieces, time to market and market pricing, right? We're not looking for the best deal on the planet, right? But we're not looking for 10-year-old pricing either. So I think that's really important as we talk about time to market, right? It's also market-based pricing.
I caught up with DHS CIO Luke McCormick after his speech to ask him for more details on some of his challenges.
The main question on the continuous delivery model is, how's it moving down into FEMA, into TSA, into other parts of DHS? Is that something coming from your office, or is it just more of a realization from those CIOs saying, hey, this works, or a little bit of both?
It's actually a little bit of both. That's a good catch. I mean, obviously, we're encouraging that because we think that's important. We think that's a go-forward model. And I think our role, again, is to sort of help them develop that ecosystem, right? That takes talent to do that, right? A different kind of talent than maybe some of the other components have a lot of, right? It takes access to various types of tools, including different contract and just processes and procedures, which is what I was talking about before. So it's a combination. You know, we're encouraging them to do it. It's important. The administration is, even with FATARA now, where they're saying, you know, 6-month delivery, this sort of lends itself to that. And they want to do that because it allows them to get capability out to the operator sooner.
Do you foresee something like a policy memo coming from your office? Or is it not quite there yet in terms of the need for something like that?
Well, there is already policy and structure out there right now. So a lot of that has come from OMB, right? And we're just sort of following those guidelines. But on top of that, you know, we're all in on this, right? Because we think it's important, and it's a much more advanced way of delivering capability and a much sooner sort of time to market.
The other thing you mentioned was the HRIT. Can I just get a little deeper update on how that's going? You mentioned that you guys have done some of the work to look at the architecture, look at the processes, look mm-hmm. at the tools.
Yep.
You're doing some consolidation on learning management, performance management systems. Yep. Where are you with that piece?
We actually have gone to IOC with that capability, right? So we're in the throes of that, and that's been in place for some time. So that is actually in implementation mode at this point, right? We have the capability up and running, and so we're actually going through the process of starting to migrate the various components to that end-state configuration.
What comes next from that HRIT?
Yeah, so we'll get the learning management, and then we'll get the performance management under our belt. Then we're going to go back through the architecture and look at sort of where our next set of opportunities are. We're really focusing on trying to get the learning management stuff implemented at this point, and that's where we're spending our time.
One of the things that stood out to me was the comments made by Charlie, made by Stephen Rice, regarding the budget cuts. How much does that concern you at the DHS headquarters level that these CIOs are struggling with the budget challenges? It's no different than anybody, but you know, when they talk about their biggest challenges and they point to the budget, that's got to alert you a little bit.
Of course. I mean, that's always we all went through various adjustings on the budget over the last few years. That's no secret to anyone. But it really allows us to focus our decisions on risk-based decisions, right? Where is the absolute most priority, and where do we need to focus our attention, which is what we've been doing. It also gives us an opportunity. You heard me talk about time to market, and you also heard me talk about mark the market, right, and market-based pricing, where it gives us an opportunity to make sure we're getting the absolute full value out of that dollar and making sure that if that for some reason is not meeting our expectations, that we have other options available to us. Again, that sort of open market that I talk about, where we want good, healthy competition that will allow us to get innovative as far as how we're going to stretch that dollar and then use what we can and then base those decisions about where that stretch dollar goes based on the risk profile and what's the most important thing to focus our attention on.
We have to take a break. That was DHS CIO Luke McCormick. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Today, I'm playing a compilation of speeches and my interviews with Homeland Security Department CIOs. In this part of the show, we hear from Stephen Rice, the Transportation Security Administration's Chief Information Officer. Rice joined several component-level CIOs at a recent FCA lunch.
TSA, 13 years old now. We're in a state of maturity. The calendar year 15 is a year of transition. Many of our major leases, many of our data center contracts, many of our managed service contracts are all lapsing in calendar year 15. As a result, we're migrating 7 data centers simultaneously. And when you're doing that from a backdrop, it's also looking at the declining budget situation at the agency. Over the last 3 years, we've taken a $65 million budget reduction in the Office of Information Technology. And that's a catalyst for how we start looking at innovation. So as we start looking at data center migrations and why we're taking those steps, how are we positioning ourselves to modularize the application tier, modularize the application data, and then being able to look at how do you move away from having to own and operate your own infrastructure, and how do you move away from having to recapitalize that over the future? One of the most interesting aspects of TSA is the leadership is now understanding the value of the information holdings they have and its ability to inform decision makers, so we make more informed decisions more efficiently, as well as trying to drive down those costs so that they can make even more informed decisions in different type of portfolios. One of the major drivers for the agency is, you know, the number of interactions that we have with the traveling public on a daily basis. We have on average almost 2 million interactions daily. If you put that in perspective, it's almost 1.5 times the population of the country annually that we interact with. And each of those are an opportunity for us to be successful or not so successful. And what's driving that metric is the information holdings that we have on some of our legacy platforms. And as we start having discussions of what that looks like in the future, they'd like to have that information in a more real-time fashion. Right now, it's 24 hours in arrears, and they want to have that more available to them almost in near real-time. And also, they're driving us to ensure that they have it in different various platforms. So instead of having our additional laptop or desktop, that we're moving it more to a mobile platform. And that creates new drivers and challenges for us, because most of the TSA population, they don't have a mobile device. So it's looking to stretch us to say, how do you start putting that information in anybody's hands, on any platform, whether it's government-owned or privately owned, in information that we can easily interpret, and well as being able to drive down those capitalization costs so we don't have to pay for that fixed infrastructure. So for us, Bob, yeah, it's a year of transition. And it's really creating new conversations among the leadership team of how we want to operate our business. One of the areas that we're seeing for innovation, particularly start Agile and Cloud, is really it's a cultural shift. It's a cultural shift of the federal staff. They've come up over the years and being able to either own and operate their systems or own their systems with contractor support. And to be able to take that autonomy away and allow it to move in an environment where they may never physically see the system, all they see is the contract that they may hold. It's changing the paradigm of what is information assurance from a government perspective. You know, what does it mean to operate in a commercial environment? And then the other aspect is, our customers believe they're in the cloud already. They don't ever go and see the boxes. They never go down to the data center. For them, it's always on, so they don't really know where it's operating. So there's a level of expectation that it's nebulous and in a cloud environment now. So there's a cultural change in the way you communicate with the leadership to allow them to understand what that risk proposition looks like. In our case, TSA has established the Office of the Chief Risk Officer. And that's a dynamic relationship so that they can understand the risk to the agency and its current mission essential services, as well as how the IT systems support that and how that continuous monitoring might look like, and allow them to have a risk aperture of whether they want to operate in a cloud, do they operate in a private cloud, or do they want to make a larger investment and continue to own and operate their own infrastructure. But it's allowing them to have those business interactions so they understand how the operation is held together from the underpinnings. So it's a major shift in thought within an agency to be able to take these things on. You know, I've had the opportunity in the position that I hold to kind of meet with many of the CIOs across government, particularly on the civilian side, as well as I think 4 or 5 of the companies represented here I've been able to meet within their internal CIO. And they're all wrestling with the same problems that we are within a department. They're all looking at it from a little bit different set of priorities, whether it's recapitalization, moves to the cloud, how do you go to agile development, how do you go to some DevOps. how do you look at cybersecurity from an insider threat perspective? And I can tell you, you know, we're all looking at the problem, the same set of problems, a little bit different set of priorities. I've seen organizations where they don't have a cloud strategy. These are multi-billion dollar organizations don't have a cloud strategy. I see organizations that are not moving to the cloud at all. They have no intention. I see some organizations that their primary focus is on insider threat of their information holdings, particularly going to a cloud environment. And the one thing that I think is a value in my role is I'm not trying to put people on the moon. I'm trying to provide efficiency to ensure that the right information is in the right decision maker's hand at the lowest cost point available. And so, you know, when organizations, you know, try to get time on my calendar, I'm not looking for innovation. I'm looking for how are you trying to solve the same problems that I have on a daily basis. If I'm struggling with cloud, how are you trying to provide cloud to your corporate holdings? And, you know, I don't have a lot of time. I can probably speak for several of the CIOs when someone's trying to sell me a solution which they haven't even invested into their own in corporate holdings. The conversation really takes off when I see an organization that, you know, same proximate size that says, you know, here's not the solution I'm trying to sell you. Here's the solution that I've implemented myself. And here's some of the value that I see if you guys kind of looked at the same triggers. And that conversation takes off. And that really stimulates the conversation to allow us to bring other components to the table to say, you know, we all have the same problem. Mobility, cloud, agile. Information assurance, it's all there.
I caught up with Stephen Rice, the Transportation Security Administration's CIO, after his speech to get more details on some of his initiatives.
Steve, let me just start with the budget issue. This is not surprising that TSA, among other agencies, are really struggling with the budget in terms of for IT and having enough. What are you guys doing around that? $65 million over 3 years is a lot of money to lose from an IT budget.
What we've been looking at is the impact to recapitalization. A lot of fixed infrastructure where we're having to look at the fiscal year 17 and beyond about how can we be innovative so we don't have to own those systems in the future and ultimately drive down the recapitalization cost. It's forcing conversations between us and the business owners of how they can be involved in making informed decisions on the driving down their costs, but also increase the level of capability that they have today.
How have you dealt with that cut of almost $20 million a year through workforce attrition, through renegotiating contracts, through just less services? In many ways, less services is not really a great option for you guys.
It's actually just the foregoing the recapitalization in the last 3 years. It's forcing everything to the right, and it's forcing it to be a larger number over time. So it's actually forcing us to be much more innovative and thinking out of the box about how we're going to solve those problems, because those problems are still going to exist 3 years from now. But let's go ahead and try and solve them today so that it doesn't become such an impediment that we're out of the ability to change our business models.
One of the things that you guys are looking at is data center consolidation, something that's obviously going on across all of government. It happened to DHS. You guys have a TSA 7 data centers. You talked about 2015 being a big year. Can you talk a little bit about what your plans around those data centers? How are you going to consolidate those data centers?
The data centers are all a result of a couple of different things. There's some expiring contracts that we have in the area of human capital. They're also the responsibility to consolidate financial systems. They're also a force multiplier as a result of the expiration of our current leases at some of our metropolitan Washington area locations. It's forcing us to consolidate those and move those down to the data center. So ultimately, we've got 7 in flight simultaneously, and it's allowing us to look at how do we become much more efficient in managing the data, combining that data, and then also moving away from fixed infrastructure where we're going to have to push and have a recapitalization cost either today or 3 to 5 years out. Let's have those discussions now. So it's actually forcing us to be much more efficient.
Is the goal in the end to move to the 2 DHS data centers, the main ones that are for all of DHS? Is there an intern step in the middle?
I think that's the one value of consolidating data centers. It allows you to understand the current architecture as well as the architecture of the information so that you have an opportunity to say, should this information, now that we know where it's at, now we know how it's operating, should it be positioned to be cloud ready? Should we ever make it cloud ready? Or finally, do we want to make that investment and actually take on that risk? Or do we want to continue to operate in an owned and operated DHS data center Do we want to be in a hybrid model where it's in a private shared environment within a data center? Or do we want to assume an increased level of risk and make any determination? Do we want to have it in a public cloud environment? But that consolidation allows you to have good, fresh information to make those type of decisions moving forward.
You mentioned that 2015 is a big year. You talked about the seven data centers, but also other types of infrastructure that's being changed or being contracts are coming due. What else? What other areas beyond the data centers are you looking at?
It's really just the legacy back office hosting. It's what are the contract vehicles, who are the major manufacturers that we enjoy today, and what does that look like? Your contract vehicles with Microsoft, with Oracle, with IBM, with Cisco, with the gamut.
And it's really for just those typical either applications or systems that you've been using for, as you said, the last 13, 14 years.
Yep, they're just coming up. They just happen to all coincide over about an 18-month period that we need to look at and say, what are our investment strategies looking like in the future? Where are we going to be at from a financial perspective the next couple of years? And then three is, what's the level of risk that we want to take on as we look at moving to public cloud, moving to a hybrid model, even consolidating services so we don't have duplicative infrastructures that we have to manage.
Are you putting together some kind of strategy? Because this gives you a one-in-a-lifetime really chance to make major changes.
Yes, so we're in the midst of developing our cloud strategy. And when you start looking at the development of the cloud strategy, you have to also understand what the full capabilities will look like. Do you want to move into an open source for application development? As well as, can you then set an expectation where you can develop applications much more agilely, but also being able to ability to delivering more frequently, so you start going into a DevOps type of approach. And what does that look like culturally, organizationally, and what's the outcome you're trying to drive to?
And I imagine the shared services conversation comes in there at the same time, whether can you use the enterprise email if you're not already using it from DHS, or some of the workplace as a service efforts that are in the data centers, how does that play into it?
It all has to be taken into consideration of what does that outcome look like that you want to project towards, and as well as what are those ultimate costs going to look like, and can you afford them in the out years?
One other thing is the mobility. You mentioned the change. Just give me a sense of the change you made to move to Apple. How's that impacting you guys?
It's allowing us to have an understood infrastructure which our application development personnel can develop within. It's allowing us to also have a consistent and a singular MDM solution so we understand how to manage that application tier, manage down to the device level, and as well as kind of manage the level of expectation with our customers on what to expect in our portfolio.
We have to take a break. That was TSA CIO Stephen Rice. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Today, I'm playing a compilation of speeches and my interviews with Homeland Security Department Chief Information Officers. In this part of the show, we hear from FEMA CIO Adrian Gardner, and then from Mark Schwartz, the Citizen and Immigration Service CIO, and finally from Wolf Tombe, the Chief Technology Officer for the Customs and Border Protection Directorate. All three will discuss how their agency is addressing innovation. First, FEMA CIO Adrian Gardner.
Innovation for us, I think it is a do or die kind of situation. You look at the disaster environment, it's rapidly evolving everywhere from terrorism to hurricanes to unaccompanied children. Across the board, there are a number of challenges that FEMA is faced with and actually responsible for coordinating with. So we don't do that alone, right? We are a coordinating sort of body where we engage all of our state, local, and tribal and territorial partners, as well as our federal partners, partners within DHS and outside of DHS. Innovation for us is extremely important because we have to stay ahead of the curve, right? Technology in general is moving at such a rapid pace. And you think about the amount of data, the amount of information that survivors, individual citizens, first responders are expected to respond to. It's an extremely important piece upon which we have to invest in. So we have invested in a couple of applications in the cloud. We've also looking at it from an innovation standpoint around our data. So I'd actually ask each one of you to go out and read the FEMA strategic plan. It is very different than other strategic plans for federal agencies. It is actually, I wouldn't say just a strategic plan, but it's actually a strategic implementation plan. It is what the administrator and deputy administrator think are their highest priorities. One of those priorities is really looking at data-driven decision-making. So how do we take all of our data holdings, much of which has been in paper, and create the opportunity for machine-to-machine interactions? The other thing is looking at the flow of data from the local area, in other words, by maybe maintained by a locality, by a particular Homeland Security director, up into the region, then up into the headquarters organization, and then up into sort of the National Response and Coordination Center. You know, at one point in time, we had maybe 10 to 12 different common operating pictures that we call them. We now have one common operating picture that's built on creation of data and then actually the flow of that data and information up to varying levels of decision makers. It's extremely important for us to actually understand our data holdings and then what we can learn from those. So not only are we sort of, you know, one of the big things the administrator says, if you've been to one disaster, you've been to one disaster, and if you've been to one region, you've been to one region. Well, we're trying to get out of sort of that approach where we're really now saying, how do we use our data more agilely in a more innovative way to inform not only the beginning of the process or response and recovery activity, but also plan looking at preparedness and mitigation, right? So a lot of it is, how do we create sort of these playbooks, if you will, that would allow us to be more agile about the way we respond to a disaster? How can we learn from a Sandy? How can we learn from a Katrina? So on and so forth. So we're really attempting to think about it from a standpoint of really being a learning organization, being innovative about that, and then using technology to support that, right? Technology, in my opinion, should never lead. We really should actually be finding business requirements and mission requirements that drive us forward with some of the technological decisions we'll make.
Now we hear from Mark Schwartz, the Citizen and Immigration Service CIO.
We don't just need big innovations. We need small innovations. We need medium-sized innovations. We need innovation to just be a part of everything we do day to day. We need to harness the creativity of all of the people that are doing work for us. So a lot of what we're focused on is creating the right climate for people to innovate in so that it becomes just a normal part of everyday business. If you think about it, let's say I've got a software developer who has a brilliant, new, innovative idea. What's the first thing that happens? Typically, they will go to a manager, and the manager will start asking questions. Did you think of this? Did you think of this? What if this happens? Isn't this risky? And if it makes it through that gate, it'll go to the next gate, where somebody else will try to think of all the reasons to shoot down the idea, and that'll keep happening. And if they are actually going to proceed with whatever the innovative thing is, they're going to have to order our hardware. It's going to take a while to procure it and to set it up. And then maybe they'll get to do something, except if DHS oversight wants to participate, in which case there are about 105 documents that have to be written as part of the SDLC and the approval process. If that's the way you're set up, people aren't going to be innovative. It's impossible. In order to encourage innovation, what we have to do is drastically reduce the cost of doing experiments. And when I say the cost, I mean the cost in time, the cost in dollars, and everything else. We want somebody who has a new innovative idea to be empowered to do a small experiment rather than building this up into a big hardware procurement and a big program that has to be approved by various layers of oversight. We want them to almost fly under the radar because it's so cheap for them to do an experiment that the risk is tiny for the government. So some of the things we need then are cloud infrastructure, for example. We don't want to do that hardware procurement and spend all the money up front. With cloud services, we can try an experiment and then shut down the servers, and we've spent almost nothing on hardware. We want to have a streamlined process where people can try experiments within a fixed boundary, a low-risk boundary, without having to go through lots of layers of approval. We want to streamline the SDLC process. In our case, create a continuous delivery DevOps pipeline, so that they can get things into production really quickly with very little effort so that they can try things. So that's a lot of what we've been all about for the last few years, trying to encourage innovation by making it painless, extremely low risk, and requiring a very low investment upfront.
Finally, we hear from Wolf Tombe, the Chief Technology Officer for the Customs and Border Protection Directorate.
It is all about the business or the mission. If it can be as innovative as all get out, if it doesn't meet a mission need or benefit the mission, it's not going to go anywhere. The other side of that, it's got to be a benefit to the taxpayer. So are we doing this thing in the most frugal way possible to limit the burden that we're obligating the taxpayers to? So those are critical. What I love about innovation is we talk about the year of big data, the year of mobility. It's always the year of innovation because it's always changing. There's always something new. So for me, a lot of it is, you know, how do you define innovation? From a CBP perspective, it's pretty straightforward. Anything that increases officer safety, anything that improves mission effectiveness, anything that dramatically reduces cost. If it fits into any one of those buckets, it's innovative and we should look at it. You notice I didn't say technology. It certainly can be a technology, but it can be anything. It can be a best way of doing business, anything like in any new way of doing something that aids the mission, enhances officer safety, mission effectiveness, or reduces costs. The other thing is I love what Mark said about you need to create a climate conducive to innovation. I completely agree with that. And if you think about the government and what's required to actually support innovation, you have to be able to accept risk, reasonable risk, something the government's not traditionally known to do. So without that capability, you can't have innovation. You have to be able to accept failure. Again, something the government isn't traditionally renowned for having a strength in. But if you don't have failure, I will argue that you're not pushing the boundaries enough. You're not feeling truly innovative if you're never failing. If you look at the light bulb, how many times was it attempted? Any ideas? Anybody say 25, 50, over 100? Tried over 100 times to get it to work before it was successful. So, I mean, if you're not accepting failure, you're not being innovative. You have to be able to accept that. And then, you know, cost. If it's something that can reduce cost, we have to ingrain that in our people as well. We don't have an unlimited checking account. And even if we did, that wouldn't be the responsible thing to do. So you have to be able to work in those parameters to be innovative.
We have to take a break. That was Wolf Tombe, the Chief Technology Officer for Customs and Border Protection Directorate. We also heard from Mark Schwartz, the Citizen and Immigration Service CIO, and from FEMA CIO, Adrian Gardner. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Today, I'm playing a compilation of speeches and my interviews with Homeland Security Department CIOs. In this part of the show, Wolf Tombe, the Chief Technology Officer for the Customs and Border Protection Directorate, talks about how best to bring new ways of thinking to the forefront. We also hear more from FEMA CIO Adrian Gardner on what innovation means to his agency.
Innovation is actually very well aligned with another I word, which is ideas, because innovation really is about having ideas and bringing those ideas forward and saying, here's what I think this idea can do for me, for my agency, for the taxpayer. So it really is thinking outside the box, and that includes security. That includes every other aspect is, you know, what's this new paradigm that's coming out? How can I enable it for my mission's capability? I talk to a lot of vendors frequently, and I love going to, like, CES, Consumer Electronics Show. I'll walk all 4,000 booths. That takes me 3 days, and yes, I wear the cowboy boots. But I do walk by each booth, and I stopped and talked with probably 300 to 400 vendors. And every time I did, only one of them, when I asked the question, have you thought about a law enforcement aspect of this technology, only one actually said, yes, we're working with San Diego Police Department. Everyone else had a great capability that could have immediate impact on our mission. They'd never thought about it in terms of law enforcement. So you think about things that we take for granted today. How many people here are wearing some kind of health monitor, Fitbit, any other kind of monitor on themselves? Okay? Have you ever thought about the law enforcement aspect of that? I have. So when you talk to people, it's like, well, let's see, you're taking my heart rate, you're taking sometimes a stress indicators, walking, you know, how many steps am I taking, so you're getting a general baseline of my fitness levels. Could I have a mobile app created that basically says if my heart rate, whatever that baseline is, if it deviates by more than, say, 50% or 20%, whatever benchmark you want to use, do two things. One, get my GPS coordinates off the phone, and then communicate with dispatch and let them know they should do a welfare check on me. So think about that. A lot of people are wearing these today. They're consumer grade, which means they're inexpensive. You know, if I went out with an RFP to say, hey, create a sensor for me that's going to track this stuff, let's just say it'd be more than $89.95 a purchase plus a fee to have it communicate. But, you know, it's really important that we facilitate those kind of ideas. What can you do? How can you do it? How can it make things better? So the Fitbit, think about that my heart rate's screaming. It knows that. It sends something to dispatch. Do a welfare check. They come back and they, you know, S-235 dispatch. And I come back and I say, you know, dispatch S-235. Welfare check. Dispatch, thanks for calling. Everything's fine. Funny you're asking because I just had a deer run out in front of my car. I slammed on the brakes. I went into the ditch. The car's fine. The deer is fine. I'm fine. But thanks for asking. No harm, no foul. What if it's S-35 dispatch, S-35 dispatch, S-35 dispatch, S-36, S-37, S-38, respond to these GPS coordinates and do a welfare check on S-35, non-responsive, heart rates at 100 beats over a minute, 40% over threshold. You know, what's the capability of that? You know, what's the power of that? It's huge. And it's something people are taking for granted right now today. There's mission implications to that. And there's a lot more, but it's being able to look at something and say, how could this be used in my environment? So it really is about the ideas to me and my mission. Whatever that idea is, mapping it and saying, does it have a mission implication to it? And then having questions and having dialogue like we're having today. So I think that's powerful.
I agree.
Yeah, I guess I would add, I think innovation can come from any place, and I look for it everywhere. I look for it from this community, from the standpoint of the services and capabilities that you provide. You know, how are you being innovative with those services? What is your hype scale for your particular product or capability? I look at it from the open source community. So I don't think Silicon Valley is just the only answer. You know, you look at what's going on right now with U.S. Digital Services and the work of Mikey Dickerson and that whole group. That's great, a great body of work and one that we should also sort of invest in and look to for opportunities. But there are other opportunities. I mean, this group has been in this game for a long time, and you're being asked by some of these larger organizations and companies to be innovative, to keep up, to maintain pace with that group that's sitting there in Silicon Valley. So I think it's great to have a diversity of sort of players in this whole space of innovation, and I believe that competition is a good thing and will drive us all towards the better sort of fulfillment of our capabilities and sort of products. So I would say I'm looking for it across the community, across the entire space. And when I mean the whole community, it used to be open source was looked at as, that's open source. But now we see them doing some extremely sort of powerful things in our space, and you see agencies and corporations adopting those. So I think it runs the gambit. I think our challenge will be sort of understanding the cream from the rest of it. And so I think we're also going to have to be wise consumers of innovation and technologies. And so it goes back to sort of something that Stephen had said, and I think Mark as well, as far as our federal staff, I know that Mark is doing this with his project, is really looking at bringing our federal staff up and their competencies and their abilities to determine and understand what good looks like. Because I think we struggle with that today. You know, one of the things that my CTO says, you know, IT investment through Flight Magazine, right? Where, you know, you have a program or a subject matter expert or a leader, they get on the jet, they thumb through the magazine, there's an article there, and they say, wow, I need that, and we need to implement that now, right? Those are the kind of requests that we get, right? And so what we really want to do is sort of, you know, have a more, I think, informed and mature conversation about how we adopt innovation and technology. Again, we, as Mark is saying, we need places where we can experiment with that and prove that out. You know, one of the things that I really want to look back on is really, you know, one of my old friends, Harry Hickson, I don't know if he's in the crowd, one of the things he used to say was, fly before you buy, which means that we've lost sort of the construct of a bake-off when we make procurement decisions. Used to be that you would actually have to go out and prove that you could actually stand something up and as espoused, as stated, and you had a certain time frame to do that within a constrained sort of test environment. I think we need to get back to some of that.
In the last part of the show today, the panelists answer questions from audience members, starting off with one about how components collaborate. FEMA's Gardner answers first, followed by TSA's Stephen Rice.
One of the things that, you know, I really like and respect about Luke is that he's all about that, right? I mean, all of us have gone out and Mark did a day for all the CIOs to come out and look at his process on DevOps and Agile, and I think that's important. And he also extended that to our teams. And so the sharing is occurring. It's probably not as much as we would like just because a lot of times we're heads down trying to get our own specific issues sort of addressed. But I do believe that the intent and the goodwill is there. So I definitely know that I can reach out to Steve or Mark, any other CIOs, and ask for help or even a word of thought. Another example is from a standpoint of mobility. We have been running over the past year and a half a team on mobility across all of the DHS components. It was originally led by FEMA for about a year or so. now Rob Palmer within DHS proper has been running that. But it was an opportunity that Luke took to sort of look at, hey, as we're looking at mobility and the MDM solutions, why not look at it as DHS as a whole? And so that is happening. I think that it's probably not as pervasive as we'd like it to be, but it's definitely happening.
From our vantage point, Bob, it's mobility.
Yeah.
We've made a decision last year that if we have two of anything, they need to either be redundant or we're going to shut it down. We're going to shut one of them down. It's very simple, but I think it's resonating with the agency. So in our case, multiple BlackBerry infrastructures, multiple MDM solutions, and we just couldn't afford it. So we just started biting the bullet, and we became an Apple iOS shop with a good MDM solution. And what we've been able to communicate to the staff, we understand that that marketplace is shifting. They're not permanent decisions. So what it's allowing us to do is be able to stabilize our infrastructure so we understand where we can develop the apps to. I'm not trying to develop apps for multiple environments. It allows me to focus and target for our internal apps, not for external apps to the citizens. In addition, we started looking at the value of our information holdings. So where I spoke earlier, the customers think they're in the cloud already. The customers are very siloed in the information. They know what information they have. They understand the value of the information that they have within their fingertips. They don't understand the value of another customer's data, and if you commingle that data, more informed decisions can be made. So when we start talking about, you know, innovation, that we're going to go to the cloud, I can see the words bouncing off their head. They don't understand it. Yeah. But if I start able to articulate, if I were able to take your staffing models for checkpoint operations against your, which are held in one database, against your injury rates from your human capital data, against your prohibitive items capture list from another database, that they can start tying that together. And if I can explain that I don't have to own the infrastructure and that I can actually drive your costs down, they start really paying attention. And I can give that to you if I work it out right. I can give it to you in a mobile platform so you don't even need to be at your desk any longer.
That's all the time we have for today. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Today, I played a compilation of speeches and my interviews with Homeland Security Department CIOs. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.